It's time for Twig This Week in Google. The verdict is in on the Oracle lawsuit versus Google. The answer may surprise you. Jeff, Gina, and I will talk about it next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google. Episode 148, recorded May 23rd, 2012. Holy fleece. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your office Mac or PC from any other computer or your iPad or iPhone. Sign up for your free 30-day trial at GoToMyPC.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the offer code TWIG. And by Ford, giving customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIG to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. And, you know, I want to say right up front, just so you don't know, false billing, no false advertising here. Google, the cloud, Facebook, Twitter, whatever the hell we want to talk about, including occasionally Chipotle, Glee, and Habermas. Speaking of Habermas, here he is. It's 4:30 in the morning or some ungodly hour in Korea. He's in Seoul at the airport. Mr. Jeff Jarvis flying home from...
from Seoul after Sydney last week, and then I finally get home. I leave at 10 o'clock this morning Seoul time and arrive at 11 o'clock New York time.
Were you doing a conference in South Korea? What were you doing?
Yeah, this was the Seoul Digital Forum, which is a big broadcaster here. It tries to do, I think it's kind of their TED-ish thing.
Neat.
So it was fun. I mean, Tim O'Reilly was here. Not Bill O'Reilly. Tim O'Reilly and Kevin Kelly and some other good folks.
Oh, neat. Is it an O'Reilly event or just...
No, not at all. No,
they got the O'Reillys.
So it's interesting to watch him watch a conference being run.
Yes, I bet. He does some of the best, actually. He's very good at it. Well, we're so... I can't tell you how grateful we are. I know what a hardship this must be for you, Jeff. You even changed hotels, I think, so that you could do this. So thank you.
My honor and pleasure every week, because I was in the Seoul subway yesterday and someone came up and said,
no.
Are you Jeff Jarvis?
No.
No way. That is amazing.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Jeff is the author of this great book, What Would Private Parts Do? I think I've combined two books into one.
Don't ask me that question.
His previous book, What Would Google Do? His current book, Public Parts, from Simon & Schuster. And very, very good stuff. Very, very good stuff. And I love it that on the back it's all Twitter. Instead of the normal log rolling, it's all tweets. Good job. Gina Trapani is also here. She is from smarterware.org, founding editor at Lifehacker. Also a big Android user and an Android programmer. We like to get the programming point of view. Thank you for being here, Gina.
Great to be here again, just kind of living my boring life here in San Diego. I'm just kind of holed up alone in my home office all week, and this is my 1 hour of the week where I get to talk to other humans. So my one social hour, unlike Jeff, who's traveling the world.
Are you coding? Is that what you're doing?
I'm basically coding full-time on ThinkUp.
Oh, that's exciting.
For the most part, and a couple of other little projects, but for the most part, ThinkUp, yeah.
That's really great. Are you headed towards a big number point release or something?
Yeah, we're working on 2.0 right now.
Exciting.
Yes. Yes, it's exciting.
Oh, and let's not forget Gutenberg, The Private Part. That's another book that Jeff wrote. Sorry. Big story, and I think it's a good one for you, Gina. This just broke moments ago. The jury ruled on Oracle versus Google. No patent infringement found. 10-person jury found today that Google did not infringe 2 Java-related patents that Oracle had used to sue the search giant. That means Oracle is probably not going to get anything. Maybe a tiny amount of damages from one copied function. This is the end of a 6-week trial. Must have been very expensive. Some of the best lawyers in the nation trying the case.
The judge noted it was the longest civil trial he had ever presided over. 6 weeks.
The waste.
What a waste. Oracle may still get the opportunity to retry the copyright case. So understand there were really two cases, copyright infringement and patent infringement. And then the verdict on the copyright, it was just kind of weird.
It was kind of a weird non-verdict, right?
Right.
It was, you know, the fair use decision was never really made.
They didn't decide on the most important thing. Yeah.
Right. But this is a big win for Google, right? Because basically, I mean, the most they're going to pay is, I think it's like $150,000 in damages for that one copied method, which is that range check method.
The Xerox bill for the lawyers was more than that.
Right, exactly. And I think there were those 8 other test files, which were also copied. There might be minor damages for that. But this is, Google keeps that kind of money in their bathrooms. It's a big win for Google.
Robert Van Nest, lead attorney for the Google, said, "We are grateful for the jury's verdict. Today's jury's verdict that Android does not infringe Oracle's patents was a victory, not just for Google, but the entire Android ecosystem." Oracle spokeswoman, I don't know what that was, Deborah Hellinger, we're doing sound effects now, Oracle presented overwhelming evidence at trial that Google knew it would fragment and damage Java. "We plan to continue to defend and uphold Java's core write once run anywhere principle and ensure it is protected for the 9 million Java developers in the community that depend on Java compatibility." In other words, we're going to appeal this one. This is not over.
Yeah, it's not quite over.
Yeah.
But the judge was pretty great. I mean, roundly sort of lauded for how, you know, level-headed and clear-minded he was about it. The fact that he knows how to code, kind of love that. I mean, this whole trial was kind of a bummer. I kind of felt like Google was in the right, but I still don't love the way. I still feel like they mishandled the whole thing. And, you know, as a Java developer, it's like Java's, you know, write once, run anywhere ethos is very much in line with Google's commitment to openness. And it bums me out that the two companies, you know, that it came to this, that they weren't able to figure this out earlier, sooner. I mean, you know, Oracle saw dollar signs. Sun was not thrilled, but kind of went along with it. It was just the whole thing was kind of a bummer.
I don't know if I was rooting for either side, really.
Right.
I hate to see patent cases over stuff like this. On the other hand, if Google really did just kind of say, "Hey, we don't have to pay any. We're just going to use Java. We don't have to tell anybody." That's not so cool either.
Right. It isn't.
So I don't know. I just don't know. But anyway.
So in a world without software patents, which is what, you know,
right,
folks like us are saying we need, what would the impact be? Right. So let's say Google did nick use of the software. Oracle wasn't really hurt.
That's a question. Yeah. Who was damaged? What is the assertion? What is the damage that, well, you should have paid us? You should have given us money. Is that the only assertion, or that it's because their lawyer's saying it's fragmenting because they made their own Java virtual machine? It's fragmenting the right.
Okay, so there's an issue of control over your invention. All right, well, that's more legitimate.
I mean, I think it was more like the idea that the Java APIs, that if you buy a Java license, it has to adhere to a set of standards, you know, that Oracle kind of puts forth.
You can't change the API calls.
Yeah, like, I mean, you don't want to change the API calls because it does create fragmentation.
Right.
And now suddenly Java developers are building against two different, you know, interfaces. And that stinks, right? It leads to this fragmentation and non-standardization. And so.
And yet we don't want to set up a world where you could copyright an API and say, that's copyrighted. Do we?
Right. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with anyone making a different virtual machine. I mean, the whole point of Java is that you write the code once and it can run on lots of different devices. From what I understood, the Dalvik virtual machine wasn't the issue. Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that it was because Dalvik implemented APIs that weren't that were non-standard. Is that
Well, that's. I mean, if you're not writing a virtual machine that claims to be Java, you could have any API you want.
Well, right. I mean, that's part of the issue too. Is that Android never used the Java name or trademark symbol or branding? And but the reality is that Android got Java into the pockets of millions and millions of people.
And Linux, let's not forget.
Yeah. Yes.
It made Linux one of the most used operating systems.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. I don't know. We tried to get some expert people. Nobody wants to. touch this.
Everyone's just sort of exhausted like, by this whole thing. Like, this there's, not, you know,
it, you know, 6 weeks is in bed. Didn't the Microsoft thing go on for years? I mean, I don't. I'm just glad it's over. Maybe it's not over. Maybe there's more. Okay. I do. There's much more we can talk about. Well, as long as we'll do patents, we'll do one more patent story, which is the TeraHop story, which is kind of an interesting story. This is almost like Google helping out TeraHop customers or something. So TeraHop and they're two startup companies, Tamarack and TeraHop, which were run by a guy named Seattle investment professional named Mark Spangler. He was indicted last week on 23 counts of fraud and money laundering, saying he funneled $46 million of investors' funds into startups that he held interest in called Tamarack and TeraHop. TeraHop flopped last year, filed for bankruptcy. A court-appointed receivership was established to manage the assets. And apparently Google has now paid $10 million to TeraHop for their patents. Most of that money will go to those investors who got ripped off by Spangler. So
Google's just beefing up their defensive patent portfolio.
Yeah, it's kind of as a happy ending for everybody. The defrauded investors get some of their money back. The patents actually are not insignificant. TeraHop was going to sell to big companies to manage their shipping containers and stuff. So the patents include an antenna in a cargo container monitoring and security system, visually capturing and monitoring contents and events of a cargo container, and radio frequency identification-based sensors and others. They're mostly RFID-type patents.
Uh-oh, they're going to track us.
Well,
I put that do not track story in the rundown, Jeff, just because I wanted to hear you talk about
it. I love that. We will. That's a good story. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit.
The Twitter. I figured at 4:30 in the morning, Jeff needed a little extra.
This is better than coffee. Actually, it's what we did. We talked about a lot on security. Now, Twitter doing the right thing with Do Not Track, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Gina and Jeff are here. This show brought to you by our good friends at Citrix, who do the best remote access software out there. If you're an enterprise, you know the name Citrix. That's like the enterprise remote access. For consumers, they've got a great solution. Same speedy, secure remote access, but it's easy to install, easy to use. You don't need the IT department to get involved. You don't need to punch a hole in the firewall. It's called Go to My PC, and it works great. 128-bit SSL, so it's actually, this is not the main reason you'd use it, but just it happens to be, if you're in an open access spot, you use Go to My PC to surf to your office computer, then surf to the rest of the world. You got a VPN, basically. It lets you really work your office computer from anywhere, from home, from the road, from any PC, Mac or PC, and I love this, now you can use Go to My PC with your iPad or your iPhone or your Android tablet. There's the iPhone app. It's free. So is the Android tablet app. So this means you really can access your office computer anywhere. From anything, very mobile. You just take that iPhone or iPad or Android tablet with you on the road, and you are able to get in there. You see the keyboard that pops up? You can type. You can access any document, run the spreadsheets, run the word processor, databases, any network resource. You literally could run Photoshop. All with Go to My PC and a tablet or an iPhone. I want you to try it right now, free for 30 days. Visit gotomypc.com, click the Try It Free button, sign up using our offer code TWIG, and then run to the App Store for your device and get the copy of the free Go to My PC app. It's really kind of cool. Offer code TWIG, gotomypc.com. Try it today from the great folks at Citrix, and we thank them for their support. It really is a very cool thing if you travel. It's Motorugal. No, Gogorola. Google. It's official. the acquisition, that went through pretty quick. The $12.5 billion acquisition of Motorola Mobility by Google is done. Google is now a hardware company, babies. This happened May 22nd at 5:53 a.m. Or at least that's when the blog was posted. Blog post was posted.
So what are they going to do with it?
That they're not clear about.
That's the question.
Yeah. Motorola made the StarTAC. I've had Motorola phones for ages. I wasn't really crazy about the Droids. The Droid was like the best Android phone, but quickly eclipsed the Droid. But Verizon is pretty much a Droid-heavy place. They love the Droids. So the CEO, Sanjay Jha, who was there, is stepped down, and a Googler, Dennis Woodside, is now the CEO. One of Dennis. Now, maybe we can read the tea leaves about the guy who's running this. Yeah. He built the Google business in the Middle East, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Russia. He was president of the Americas region for the last 3 years. So he's like an administrator.
He's Tim Armstrong's successor, I guess.
Yeah. Committed partner to their customers. Now he'll be an outstanding leader at Motorola. He's an Ironman triathlete.
Oh, well, that doesn't.
I don't know. The only thing
he can do anything.
The only thing that I think might be germane is that he has experience in Middle East, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Russia, which are really going to be growth markets for Android phones, I think. These are areas that are dominated by Nokia and ripe for the plucking, perhaps. True. Maybe China as well there. That would indicate, if that's the case, that would tell me that Google wants to make phones. Or maybe it's just that they want to go to the existing phone manufacturers. I don't know. That's the real question everybody's asking. Certainly, if you're HTC, Samsung, LG, is Motorola going to continue to make phones? And will they have special access to Google? And how soon can we sue?
CNET did a pretty good piece on this.
What did they say?
They did a piece of like three or four possibilities of what Google could do with Motorola. One of the more extreme ones would be to sell off the business, to keep the patents and sell the business.
I don't think that was the point.
Yeah, no, I don't think that was the point. But they're saying kind of down the road, because I guess Motorola has been losing money for a while. So it's going to be a tax write-off for Google in the short term,
okay,
than the long term. To just run it independently, the new Googler, the old Googler, who's the new CEO, has a Motorola email address. So it sounds like they're going to maintain the separate brand. Hmm. Another possibility, and this is kind of what I'm hoping for, is that Google's going to use Motorola to kind of put out reference devices of the pure Google experience, phones, tablets, and Google TV.
Of late, they've been using, the first one was built by HTC, the G1.
Right.
And the Nexus was built by HTC, and then Samsung of late, right?
Right. The Nexus S, right?
Right.
Yep.
And so instead, maybe Motorola. If they get rid of Blur, nobody's going to complain.
Right.
God,
right.
Motorola had the least attractive customizations of Android and never made a pure Google phone, to my knowledge.
Right. I mean, I'd love to see. I know Google works with vendors. So I think the way this works is that vendors pitch Google for their ideas of what the kind of reference device should be, and then Google chooses one, and then they go with them. I think that's how it's worked. Like, that's how HTC got. I would love to see Google work with Motorola, or for Google to just put out the pure Google experience.
Make it perfect. And I kind of like Motorola's hardware. I'm trying to, the Droid Max is not bad. That's the current Droid. It's got good battery life. The truth is, the top of the line Android phones right now are the Galaxy S3, which is coming out at the end of the month. And everybody who sees it raves like crazy. And the HTC One.
Mm-hmm.
Over here in Seoul, I was dying, to go buy a Note, since I'm jealous of you, Leo, thinking it'd be cheaper here. It wasn't. To match the price on Amazon, I'm going to do a very bad currency calculation. It was 770,000 won was what I was looking for as a price, and they were 900 won over here. Anyway, there's this amazing place called the Technomart. There's this huge, huge techno place with 20,000 vendors. I didn't get to go there, but the Technomart, you go around this whole floor, it's nothing but phones.
Wow!
And you do see a few more things. There were the notion of the phone tablet has spread more than I knew. HTC.
Really? Not just the Note.
Yeah, not at all. No, there's a few others. A little slightly different square, different shape factors.
LG has a square one, yeah.
Yeah. But there's more variety coming. And it's amazing in the phone world now, how, you know, Nokia owned the world for so long. Motorola owned the world. Nokia owned the world. And now how quickly it can just pass hands. It's phenomenal.
Right.
It's a very high risk business.
It is, although I think Samsung is rapidly achieving ascendance. Again, though, HTC's One is arguably the nicest one. I ordered a Samsung Galaxy S3. I couldn't resist, I have to say.
It does look really nice.
Well, Scoble saw one at Flipboard and said it's incredible. It's fast, beautiful. He says it's the best screen he's ever seen.
Yeah, I love how little chrome there is. It looks really, I'm looking at pictures of it now. Yeah. Damn you, Leo.
It's not a good business to try to keep up in. You can't because there's a new one every month.
It's true. It's true.
And I'll probably have to retire the Note because it's going to use. I'm going to use an AT&T SIM. So I guess I could use a T-Mobile SIM, but I think it's only Edge on T-Mobile. I can't live with that. And it's big. It's big. You know, it's not quite as big as the Note, but it's big.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4.8 inches, right? Something like that. So it's a little bit bigger than the Nexus. Well, I don't know. Okay. So, what did CNET say? That either they could just be getting it for the patents.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of their less likely scenarios, but possibly
they could leave it as it is, as an independent business.
Right.
Let it go. I don't know why they would acquire it if that's what their plan is. They were losing money, right?
Well, the patent. Well, so they're losing money, so that's good tax wise for Google.
Oh, okay. It's a write off.
Yeah, it's a write-off.
I'll never understand. I know. It's too complicated for me.
Yeah,
well, it's cash flow versus bottom line, but I don't get it either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it doesn't make sense for an individual, right? Like, oh, good, I'm going to lose a lot of money, so I pay less taxes, and then I don't lose quite so much money.
Yeah.
Or it's the showcase.
Android showcase. Yeah. So putting out reference devices, the pure Google experience, phones and tablets, and the Google TV, too. That's the Motorola set-top business.
I wonder if the set-top business may be the MacGuffin, maybe the real point of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people are raving over the LG TV now has Google in the TV, has Google TV. And people are really flipping over it. Sony just announced a new Google TV device. Even though Logitech has not been happy, there seem to be plenty of takers for Google TV. So does Google need another manufacturer to make
Remember
Google
Eric
TV?
Schmidt's prediction of, you know, Google TV, you know, 6 billion copies or whatever the hell he predicted? Wasn't there also a rumor at one point that they were going to get rid of the TV piece of Motorola that was confounding us?
Yeah, we haven't seen that happen.
No. Oh.
Motorola makes these big set-top boxes, but I can't imagine that there's much interest at Google and continue to make the kinds of set-top boxes Motorola makes, which are crap. So maybe...
that's interesting. If you suddenly... Do you create a market pressure? Because set-top boxes are just the world's worst computers.
Right.
Right?
They're cheap.
Slow, horrible, cheap.
Right.
If suddenly on the market there were a whiz-bang cable box... Then I guess there's a few questions. One, could you create a consumer demand for that on its own? Would somebody, you know, basically, do you start buying your own cable boxes? Does that affect the whole DOCSIS standard and how things operate?
No, that's interesting.
Right? Could I end up replacing my cable box finally with something that's really good? Because it is a cable box. It will match the standards. There is a standard to how to do this. You can't say no. You know, the idiocy of the cable company refusing to work with DVR or other things.
Most Comcast customers, I think, have Motorola set-top boxes. Does this look familiar? Ooh.
Oh. They're just terrible.
Or this. My current one, I just got a new one. It's a Motorola.
And not to sound too buzzwordy, but talk about ripe for disruption. Ugh.
Oh, man.
Gigahertz tuner and sports MPEG 2. This is the latest. They've got DVR, HDMI... DOCSIS 2 cable modem built in. DOCSIS 2 is kind of obsolete, by the way. So, yeah, these just are not state-of-the-art devices. I can't imagine Google. God, you got to think that Google, these people love shiny stuff. They're not going to want to keep making this. They'll spend, you know, that would be an argument. If they can't, like, just kind of come in. The problem is they've got, you know, I'm sure they've got millions of these out in the field.
It's a huge installed base. But yeah. That's two questions here. One, if you had a powerful computer finally as your box, what all could Google do with that? Imagine.
Right.
And the next question is,
but you got to get the cable companies to buy these things.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Because the cable companies want to lease these things to us because they get back, you know, n times the investment in the box over time. And speaking of companies that lose money that are wonderful to have, right? On a cash basis, the amazing things happen, but on a P&L basis, they lose money like crazy because they have such a huge investment in the stock.
Right.
I mean, in the physical stock. So
they would just piss off the MSOs if they dropped
and
these.
Do they care? Do they care?
Well,
so what happens?
Only
is
if you wanted to get in that business.
Well, that's one possibility. But Google comes along and just says, "Hey, world, here's a better box. We're gonna undercut the price of the market like crazy. You know, screw this idea of paying $12 a month for a box. Right? It's a ridiculous price to your cable company. Here, buy the world's best box 100 times better for $100.
Oh God, they'll just kill. Oh, jeez.
I love the idea.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I'm quelling over the. And of course, it's purely speculative. We have absolutely no idea, world, what's going to happen. But that's our dream scenario. Maybe.
I could see just somebody. There's somebody at Google who's got acid reflux right now because he's trying to figure out what the hell do we do.
Well, I mean, it's going to be either Apple or Google, right? And Google has a vested interest in being the first one to do it.
True.
So, yeah.
But that's where they almost have a conflict because they have acquired a business now that has a huge customer base using really crappy, slow, cheap boxes, and they'd love to move them over to Google.
Here's the beautiful thing, Leo. The customer base is B2B, and Google could enable B2C. So it as Gina says,
I understand, but by doing that, right. they're going to kill. Well, maybe they don't care. It's a money losing.
Yeah, they don't care, right?
Money losing business.
And so at some point in fiduciary responsibility, so the cable company is going to say, no, we refuse to buy a far better box for less because we want to keep our crappy service and control on you and keep strangling you.
Wistful has a good point in the chat room. He says, really, Google should have gone to the FCC and got a regulation that said customers have the option of buying their own set-top boxes. Because, you know, that is the case in modems. You could buy your own cable modem. I did. So I got a much better one than the one that Comcast would give you.
That's a good point.
If FCC said, all right, cable companies, you have to let customers bring their own. I guess that's what Cable Card was all about.
You know, and Cable Card was, what a failure.
What a flop.
Because I couldn't find the...
You could tell the cable companies what to do, but if they don't want to do it, they can really screw with you.
Right, and this maybe changes that.
That's exactly what happened. Well, we'll find out. It's now official. It's Googarola or Motorola. Motorugal. Googarola, Motorugal.
Googarola.
Googarola. Yeah, because it's really a small company acquired by a big company.
Yeah.
It's a big company should get pride of place. Did you see the Google Doodle, by the way? Today.
How awesome.
There's a full synthesizer on your Google. It's a Robert Moog's 78th birthday. And this, not only does it have like all these features, but I'm sorry.
This is great radio, folks.
This is great radio. But it also has a little tape recorder here so you can record your.
Okay, Leo, I'm waiting for you to have a fit that it has a G+ button on it, too.
Yeah.
Hey, I can share my immortal masterpiece to Google+. What's wrong with that?
But there's also a permalink button.
That's true.
You can share it however
I like
you
that. On the reel-to-reel, on the Revox 4-track. So that's what I recorded, and now I can do track 2. And now I can try. I've got a 4-track masterpiece. Anyway,
I'm viewing source.
Is it? What is it? It's JavaScript. What is it?
Yeah, it looks to be all.
It's apparently like huge.
Yeah.
Steve Gibson was saying it just like takes when you open it up, it takes up like another gigabyte of RAM.
Yeah, it's a huge file. It's all HTML5, CSS, JavaScript.
It's
no
the
flash.
Google Moogle Doodle. I wonder if anybody has uploaded compositions. from the Google Moog. Be fun if, well, I guess we just watch Google Plus, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I wonder if they get hashtagged if you share them.
Yeah, they should, but who knows? Yeah, because I would like to see. I'm sure there's somebody, not me, obviously, but there's sure somebody who can use this. Google must make four, not one, not two, not three, but four antitrust fixes to satisfy Europe.
Sigh.
I was waiting for that sigh.
The Wall Street Journal just had an editorial, and the editorials in the Wall Street Journal are, you know, everything every company does are wonderful, but just saying that this is not consumer-focused at all.
Right. No, in fact, the commission concluded that Google's business practices are unfair to competitors. And Google says, we disagree with the conclusions, but we're happy to discuss any concerns they might have. One, I'm not sure I disagree with any of this, by the way. Listen, these are the four things that the commission says are concerns, and Google now has a week or two to propose how they'll address these concerns. One, unequal treatment of third-party vertical search links. What are vertical search links?
I think in things like travel or whatever.
Specialized search engines.
Yeah, and I, every time I say this, you know, it was the journal. Far be it from me to quote a Wall Street Journal editorial, but they said even if that's the case, what's wrong with that?
So this is the case where if you search for a flight on Google, you'll get Google's own IAT. Here, I'll search for San.
Yeah, Google Flights over Kayak, for example.
Right. So that's unequal treatment of vertical search links. That's concern number one. I don't know. I don't think that's what we've been saying. You know, like does YouTube, and it's hard to tell. Does YouTube show up more than it should?
The journal says, let's stipulate that some of these charges may even be true, but how does it follow they're bad? Consumers presumably benefit when their search tools provide more valuable information, not when there are more different tools to deliver that information.
Well, this is that church and state thing that I always bring up. We had Matt Cutts on Triangulation last week. We talked a little bit about poor Matt. I don't know why. I always put him in that position. But, you know, I mean, you know, you can absolutely make the point that Google has the right to, it's its business to do whatever it wants to promote its own properties from within a search. There's no law that says search has to return ecumenical results.
Exactly.
Well, it's that free speech, you know, the algorithm being covered under kind of, you know, the algorithm is like editorial and it's a free speech issue.
Right. So, they have the right, in other words, to do what they want to skew the algorithm in their favor.
But Google's never made that argument. Like other
no.
people have made that argument, but Google's always said our results are, you know, we provide neutral search results.
Gina, that's where they shifted. Where they had chat room, help me. The libertarian law blogger. We did this story last week.
Florian Mueller from Foss Patents.
No. Chat room will tell me in a second. We did the story last week where he wrote the white papers defending Google as
Volok.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, right.
Right, so that's, Gina, I think that was a big shift where Google was endorsing a view that search is an opinion, thus search is editorial.
But so they commissioned that paper, right? I mean,
right.
But they didn't write it. But
that indicates their thinking, I think, then. Right? So I think you're right. They never made that editorial argument before. I think that you're right on to it, that actually changed last week.
So it's funny because Matt Cutts even said, yes, we believe we have a great trust of keeping search agnostic and accurate, not to favor our own stuff. And
but
we
it's
endeavor
just like
to
the
do
New
that.
York Times, I mean, not just the New York Times promoting its business, but why does the New York Times have its own reporters rewrite stories to get under their own byline?
They do?
Right. Of course. All the time.
I know the Huffington Post does that, but
that's not what I was trained to do, right?
There's a good story. Let's steal it and put it under our own byline? No.
Oh, yeah. That's, what,
that's plagiarism.
No, it's not, because you're rewriting it entirely. You're taking the information, which cannot be copyrightable, and you're adding whatever value you think you're adding. You know, that's part of the egotistical part of this. But every newspaper in the country, I do it all the time.
We write
a box of clips.
Write much better. Well, that's all we do at Twit, so I'm not...
Right.
I shouldn't complain.
The thing is, though, that Google's damned if they do or damned if they don't, right? So if they're going to go this way and say that our algorithm is protected under free speech, that we're exercising editorial control over our algorithm, so that's protected under free speech, then things like searching for, I forget what story that was. It was searching for some name and it suggested Jewish after it. That was considered anti-Semitic.
They can do anything they want.
Then they have to take responsibility for that. Then suddenly they can be charged with, you know, racial or hate speech if autocorrect.
In some countries,
You know, right? So, like, either way, they're kind of screwed. Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
But this is the kind of the same analogy, and I think this is what he wrote in that piece, was that, you know, this is kind of like the New York Times pretending to be neutral, but actually being run by humans who make a lot of decisions about what should show up in the paper and how. This, like, kind of faux neutrality. And that's what Google's sort of been doing up until now. But, it's good to ask the question. And it's interesting. It'd be interesting to see if they really make that switch. And I think Jeff is right. I think that shift has started to happen with that paper.
Do real people care? Or is it just us?
No, I don't think so at all. You know, one more point on this. And I'm having a senior moment. Gina started that earlier before we were on the show, making me feel old.
It's 4:30 in the morning. You have every right to feel old.
I have ice on my knee and it's some pathetic. Band-aids too. You don't want to know. So Bill Gross sold his ad company way back when to Yahoo. What was it called?
Oh, I don't
remember. The original ad company.
Overture.
Thank you. Okay. So remember what Overture was. Overture said you could pay for position.
Right.
Right. And Google came along and said, no, that's not a very good experience. We're not going to do that.
Right.
But as a precedent, as an ethic or a standard in the industry, paying for position was the way the industry worked.
Right. And there Google, I really believe Google was almost started in response to that. And certainly the don't be evil that Paul Buchheit suggested as the company mantra was exactly in response to that. Danny Sullivan
said. So now you can look at that two ways, right? You can look at that one way and say, well, it is evil for Google to promote its own stuff. And I would argue that's what every media company does. But you could also argue it the other way and say, well, Google's still way better than that, which
Google,
was an industry standard.
This is your point, Gina, I think is well taken. Google has to decide, are they a media company?
Yes.
Or are they a somehow agnostic search company? They can't have it both ways, and they have because there's different rules, and they can't say, "Well, and sometimes it's well, no, we're above the fray, in order to preserve, you know, their safe harbor." And other times, no, we get the right to say whatever we want, First Amendment, in order to put advertising in their results, and you can't have it both ways because there's different rules. Pick the way you're going to be.
And, you know, to your question, I don't think people really care because people trust the Google brand.
Oh.
But the minute that people start to not trust the Google brand, they
That's
are
the
going to care.
Well, they may not even care. They may not know overtly. It could happen just because they go, well, these results, you know, I don't know. I don't like this anymore. I'm going to go try Bing.
Well, right. Exactly. You're exactly right. It would manifest itself more
that's
like
how it
that.
Would be. I don't think that's going to happen. Number two from the European Commission, concern number two, this would be a concern, copying content from virtual search engine or vertical search engines. They think they're copying stuff from like restaurant reviews from third-party websites without authorization. Now, remember, Yelp complained that that's exactly what Google was doing. So Google stopped as soon as Yelp complained. Because, I mean, they index the content.
Right, well, but there's a big danger there is that they copy the content of the entire net in the sense of being able to index it and being able to analyze it. Now, do they present what they copy? They do in search engines. You know, how much of...
That's the nature of search.
What's fair use?
That's the business they're in. But that's why, if you're a search engine, you can't be a media company because that confuses the issue. That's my point. If you're a search company, then you are off the hook for copying because that's what you do as a search company. You put excerpts up from search results.
Well, that's not necessary. I mean, if you run a blog, if you run a media site and you quote an excerpt from another article, that's not copying. That's fair use. That's commentary, right? And so the excerpts in Google's search results are a certain length.
Well, I would only complain if I'm Yelp if nobody ever went to the search result but just said, oh, I got what I wanted right here on the Google page. Then you got a problem, right?
Right.
Because Google's stealing traffic.
I met somebody here in Seoul, and I don't think I'm revealing anything, said doing some work with Google on fair use and said it's a huge issue around the world. Listen how we were talking about fair use before in the Android case.
Right.
Now fair use here, fair use in the U.S. And U.S. has a fair use doctrine that isn't the case around the world. And then even so, fair use confounds people because there's no definition of what fair use is on purpose because fair use is different by context. So this whole notion of Google resting on fair use is a critical, critical strategic necessity for them.
Yeah, I mean, here we are, Twit's a media company, and we're talking about excerpts of the Information Week's article about the antitrust fixes that Google has to make.
And you're right, and we think we will put a link to that full article so people can read it.
Absolutely.
And you know what I should do, and I don't do this always, and I should do this, is quote, say, oh, this is from an article written by Thomas Claiborne in Information Week. But we will, you know, we show it and we put that in the show notes, but I should actually, I try to do that.
Right, but even then, all Thomas is doing,
he's just recapitulating.
Which is fine. That's what journalists do, but there's no great holy writ in that. They're summarizing something that we can link to directly now.
Right.
And it's a service. Thank you very much. It's great to do it. Smart stuff. But, is that some kind of holy fleece owning it thing? I don't know what that means.
Holy fleece?
I don't know what that means.
It's holy fleece, Batman.
Holy fleece, Batman.
Wait a minute. There's like a term of law called holy fleece?
No. It was holy grail and finding the fleece.
There is. The Church of the Holy Punchy. Fleece? The Order of the Holy Fleece?
That's just punchy. That's it.
Charles V in 1556 was dressed entirely in black except for the red collar of the Order of the Holy Fleece. Holy fleece.
You have to be wearing a Twit fleece.
So there's the Holy Grail and there's the Holy Fleece?
I had no idea.
Well, you brought it up.
Sleep deprivation.
Synapses crossed.
Holy fleece. I like it. Is that because the moths got to it? Search item 3 of the 4. We got to get right through this here. The search agreements with partners. Commission says that Google is asking for exclusivity when you put AdSense on your you can't display ads that might be confused with Google ads on your website. You cannot use another site search service, and you can't display, quote, any non-Google content targeted advertising. So it's
that's
not
the one that does hit most to a potential monopoly issue, because monopoly, I argue, that Google has is not in search at all. Other kinds of choices.
Right.
The market gives them the penetration that gives them. Where Google does have power of God is in advertising.
Boy, that's interesting. If I put AdSense on my website, I can't put anybody else's ads on there?
I don't think for you, Leo, they care. No offense. I think that those are for big corporate deals.
Ah.
But, I mean, if you agree, I mean, those are AdSense's terms. You don't have to. But
that's exactly right, Gina. And so if you look at, let's say, Google's deal with About.com, you bet your bippy that Google puts those conditions on because Google gave About.com guarantees.
Right.
And Google gave them, it was a negotiation. So what does Google get out of the negotiation? Google says, okay, we'll give you a good deal, but we're the one in town. And About.com says for $50 million a year, okay, you can be.
I bet that's similar in other ads.
Yeah.
Finally,
Here's the other thing. There's category exclusivity too, right? An advertiser will sell and say, okay, I'm only going to use GM for this category, and thus I won't sell to Ford, right? Which limits you greatly, but that's negotiation.
Finally, they say you cannot, Google prevents people from moving their AdWords campaigns to other non-Google ad services. If you run your own advertising network and the AdWords API client offers functionality that copies data between Google and your advertising network, then you must ensure that end users must manually select AdWords campaigns or campaigns in that network for copying so they may optimize them prior to each instance of import into or export from that network. In other words,
I can't
automate copying.
Portability. Who else offers such portability? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Google brings the data liberation front to AdSense, fine.
Right.
But I can't imagine anyone. I mean, again, I don't know what I'm talking about here.
You're right, though. It seems a lot to ask.
This is Europe, like going after. What fascinates me about the story is that I think Europe knows they have, the EU has a weak case because they're, before they even decide to drag Google through the mud, they're saying, okay, if you just do these four things, you're clear.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's all we ask.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but Google's not going to do it.
I think Google should be hanging tough.
Maybe Google will come back and say, okay, we'll do maybe a third of maybe two of these. How does that work?
That's what's happening, right? This is a negotiation.
Negotiation.
Yeah.
So the EC says, do this. And it's just a letter to Eric Schmidt. Would you mind? These four things kind of bug us. And Eric said, well, I'll do two. Exactly, Gina. I'll do two. And I'll cut you some slack on the third or something.
Right.
The EC said Google has a matter of weeks to propose remedies to the four concerns or face formal proceedings that could end in a fine or remedies imposed by European regulators. Google says it disagrees with the allocations. Competition is already increasing in the search market. We've only just started to look through the commission's arguments, Google told Ars Technica. We disagree with the conclusions, but we're happy to discuss any concerns they might have. Competition on the web has increased dramatically in the last 2 years since they're so far behind.
I love the skill that it is to write a grin effing response to things.
We respectfully submit to the European Commission two letters, F and U. here is our offer. Google says the competitive pressures facing Google are tremendous. Sounds like they got a headache. We got pressure. Innovation online has never been greater. But Google's net share of the desktop search market is down.
Yeah, the search is yesterday's war.
Yeah. Yeah. So just take that, EU.
And, you know, and the irony is, one of the other stories in there is that Chrome surpasses IE. You know, Microsoft owning IE was supposedly going to ruin the whole world.
Right, right.
And the irony is that Google was the next one in to fight that. And now Google's going to own the whole world, but then Facebook comes in and it's going to own that, and somebody else is going to be coming in. That's the new world, folks.
It's stuff moves,
you're behind.
Well, it's just stuff moves way too fast for governments, which are built, at least in the U.S., to work slowly because the founders didn't trust speedy government. And, you know, what's happening, it's just going to get faster and faster, so pretty soon government just won't. It's such an impedance mismatch now, it's not going to ever get anywhere. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Gina and Jeff are here. We're talking about Google. We got to talk about the Facebook IPO. That's turning out to be just a mess. The issues, not me, you know, it sounds like people got ripped off. Then there's a great quote from a Business Insider that talked to a hedge fund manager on the Facebook IPO and what went wrong. And the anonymous hedge fund manager said that basically he said, well, we're mad because we thought we were going to get a lot of money off of Muppets. That's what they call us, little normal investors. We thought the Muppets were going to get suckered, and they didn't. And so we're mad. You Muppets didn't fall for it. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Right now, I want to talk about Ford and the Ford electric vehicles. So great. The 2012 Focus is here. The electric Focus at your EV-certified Ford dealer. Oh, man. You know, some people were complaining. I remember this. You know, a couple of companies already had their electric vehicles, Chevy and Nissan and so forth. And everybody's saying, where's Ford? Where's Ford? And I remember talking to Alan. I said, where's Ford? I said, they're saying, where's Ford? And he said, you know, we wanted to really do it right. We did not want to rush into this. We wanted to make the right electric vehicles. We wanted to make sure that we could make it across the line, not just a token electric vehicle. And they did it. The 2012 Ford Focus is, I mean, they're using state-of-the-art batteries to give it the most fuel-efficient five-passenger vehicle in America, the best city rating in its class, 110 miles per gallon E. That's the new equivalent for electric vehicles, MPGe. 110. It has the best in-class driving range of 76 miles. That's good. That's good. I mean, you wouldn't drive across country on this, but I have another choice for you if you're going to do that. But for getting around town, that's plenty. And it charges up in 3 to 4 hours. That's the best in-class 240-volt charge time. You, of course, have to get the 240-volt, optional 240-volt home charging station for that. But like half the time the Leaf takes. That's really fast. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric. It's available now. And they've updated so much stuff. Well, it uses regenerative braking so that, in fact, they were able to capture more than 90% of the energy that would be lost in a braking system and put it back in the battery. That's one of the ways they get this range so high and this efficiency so high. The Sync and My4 Touch have been updated to an EV status. So they do things like monitor the battery state of charge, maximize energy efficiency, let you control the vehicle charger preconditioning settings, find the most eco-friendly route. All of that stuff built in. In fact, they even have smartphone apps that do that, including a value charging feature powered by Microsoft that is basically one button push to take advantage of off-peak and reduced rate utility hours. All of that built in automatically. Take a look. It's this is the website, Ford.com/technology. Ford.com/. It's little things. It's little things like... the light on the where you plug in that shows you how far the charge is. It's so nice. See that? It goes around, and it shows you. You always know when your car is fully charged and ready to go because it lights up. I like that. Isn't it fun to plug your car in? Now, if you are going to drive across country, then you might want to take a look at the Ford Fusion Energy. That's going to be available early next year. That's a plug-in hybrid. I think this is the one I'm going to get. So the idea is you've got a gas engine and a plug-in. You use gas when you need it. You use electricity when you need it. You get 100 miles per gallon E, 100 MPGe. This is going to be very cool. This is the Energy 2013 Ford Fusion Energy. They say it'll be available early in 2013. Really cool stuff. Visit the website, Ford.com/technology, and go to your EV-certified Ford dealer and drive one today. Scott Motti posted a great, let me see if I can find it, a great picture of, they did this yesterday, the Ford employees got together on the campus, and they made a blue oval. Let me see if Scott's got this on his Pinterest. He Pinterested it, I thought. Oh, I can't find it. Anyways, pretty cool. Scott's awesome. Okay, let's move on. Next story, ladies and gentlemen. Larry Page says Facebook is holding users hostage. He told Charlie Rose how unfortunate it is that Facebook has been closed with the data. He says, we're in the business of searching data. They would like to see that data.
Oh, yes, they would.
They would like to see that. I think the idea that, you know, you'd hold your users hostage kind of in the absence of reasons for it doesn't make sense. Yeah, there's reasons. Larry, there's reasons. From a user's perspective, Page said, oh, it's great. I'm joining Facebook. I want my contacts. In Google, we said, fine, you know. He says, you know, a lot. You can get them from Google. And the issue we had is then the Facebook said, no, Google, you cannot do the reverse. This is when they let you use your Google contacts when you sign up to Facebook, but not vice versa. He says users don't understand what they're doing. They're putting data in and they don't understand. You can't take it out. So we said we'll only participate with people who have reciprocity, and we're still waiting. This is going to be a shooting war. You keep talking like that, Larry. Google versus Facebook. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I was looking at a place on Facebook, and I clicked on the address, and it launched Bing Maps. I mean, you know, obviously, Facebook and Microsoft and Yahoo, you know, have figured out ways to work with one another, and Google's just out.
Yep. Let's talk about the do not track, since I don't want Jeff to fall asleep. Now, Steve Gibson just reviewed this on Security Now, and he says Twitter's doing everything right. So, you know, there's do not track in the browsers now, Firefox, Internet Explorer, and Safari. Not in Chrome.
Not in Chrome.
There are extensions, of course, but not in Chrome. Do not track is a simple way for users to, you check the box in your browser to tell a web service that you don't want information about their visits collected across websites. Keep the data where it is, not share it with other sites. Do not track me across the internet. So Twitter has announced they're going to do this new thing, which I think is kind of cool. I'm actually curious what you guys think. Twitter is going to track you across the net wherever there's a Twitter share button, which is a lot of sites, kind of like the Facebook like button. And then based on the sites you visit, this is the only thing Twitter is going to do. They're going to suggest other Twitter user accounts to you, saying, well, you know, you hang out at Starbucks a lot. You should probably follow Starbucks. And here it is in your suggested user list, customized. I think that that's probably a good use for it. It's also a trivial use. And like, should they be following us around just so they could suggest better users?
Well, but okay. Should they be following us around?
They're following us.
Like, they're not following us around, right? Like the widget is embedded in these other pages, you know. So if I read an article by, you know, that Leo's written, and there's a follow Leo button on that article, and I do that, you know, 10 times in a week, and then I go back to Twitter, it says, hey, maybe you should follow Leo because you seem interested in his stuff. Like, that's not following. You know, like, those widgets are there anyway. They're just saying that they're using that data.
That's paying attention to the signals you're giving them.
Right. Well, that's paying attention to the referrals. Yeah.
Yes. This is. I mean, listen, Twitter's been doing some really very good things lately, like its patent stuff and all that. But this is slightly disingenuous, I think, and has an impact in the debate.
Well, they've been to finish the thought. They've been very clear that if you have Do Not track in your browser turned on, they won't do it.
Here's the point, Leo. They never tracked you because they didn't have any business reason to do so. Because Twitter has no business model and no ads. It's not so. The fact that Twitter doesn't, it's like saying that Ford's cars aren't going to track you. Well, they never did.
Right? Why should they? Well, here's right. So now if you go to your settings on the Twitter, let me do that. You'll see that there is a button that says "Do not track me." Well, actually, it's the other way around. Sorry. Personalization. Tailor Twitter based on my recent website visits. But then, and I think this is to their credit, preview suggestions tailored for you, not currently available to all users, and learn more about how this works and your additional privacy controls.
Yeah, but Leo, it wasn't here. It was for the press release. And the press release says, oh, we're wonderful. We're Twitter. We don't track.
Yeah,
Twitter never had to track and has no reason to track. And so they basically created a new feature so you can turn it off so they can say it. And the problem I have with that is it affects the debate, right? It says, oh, well, good. Somebody's not tracking me. Everybody else who is evil. And we're back into that again.
Yeah, because now everybody who says, oh, well, how interesting, because Facebook doesn't say they support Do Not Track.
Exactly.
And those like buttons are everywhere. What's Facebook doing with those?
Gina's sitting there chortling and thinking, I wound him up this morning.
saying it's disingenuous that Twitter is really using this to take a pot shot at Google and Facebook?
Yes.
Clever.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how services sort of differentiate themselves. I mean, DuckDuckGo's whole business model is like, we don't keep your search terms. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Look, the Do Not Track is a feature, and that's the name of the feature. You know, Twitter is not calling it tracking. I mean, that's the name of the feature in the browser. And I feel like it's akin to saying, I'm a search engine and I'm going to respect your robots.txt. If your robots.txt says that we should index your stuff, then we won't. And I think that's a good thing. Look, the reality is, a very small percentage of users are actually going to turn on Do Not Track in their browser and then go to the settings in Twitter and turn it on. Of course, it's a PR move. It definitely is. They're trying to differentiate themselves and say, hey, we're respecting this browser feature and the implication is these other guys aren't. I don't know that that's a bad thing, though. I mean, for the people who do care about this stuff, it seemed like...
But they basically turned on a new feature just so you could turn it off so that they come up with a press release for doing so and thus put pressure on their ad-supported competitors and not act very collegial in the whole internet thing.
So, okay, so you feel like they're undermining...
He says it's very cynical. It's so cynical.
Business model.
He's saying it's completely cynical.
Yes.
Okay.
They would never have considered turning this on except that they can zing Facebook and Google by doing so.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be anti-Twitter, and I was at first suspicious when they did their international revealing when they're forced to take down tweets by governments, right? And I thought that was at first a bad move. I was wrong. It was actually a better move. So, you know, I could be wrong about this. But, yeah, I see it as highly cynical. And ironic, what it also points out is, once again, that Twitter has no business model.
Right.
The reason to track is because you're going to serve friggin' ads.
Well, they've closed that door.
They do have sponsored posts. Are there not sponsored posts? And
but they don't use tracking for them.
They don't use tracking to do it.
It's just random, whatever you get.
That's the problem. It's a very clumsy advertising structure. Right. Let me put it this way. They wish they had a reason to track you. Oh, they so wish they had a reason to track you.
But since they don't, let's make a virtue.
Since they don't, what the hell is turned off? Right, exactly. The second problem is this whole third-party other sites thing. If you believe, as I do, that content is going to become more embeddable all around the net, right, that everything becomes more like a YouTube video, then this idea of going site to site, oh, my God, they're going site to site to site. Well, so will the content. And the content should travel with analytics.
If a YouTube video is embedded on my blog, I can't very well say to YouTube, oh, but you can't check out who's looking at it.
Right, exactly. So that architecturally where the net is going, where the web is going, I think, is to enable more of that kind of embedding. That's part of what Twitter is part of. But now they're kind of saying, oh, well, no, if it goes across sites, we won't do it. Well,
that's really interesting point of view.
I feel like Twitter knows so much about me, though. I mean, 5 years, 6,000 tweets. They've got data on how many times I've clicked on links. They know a lot about stuff that I like, who I'm friends with, my political views. But like, they can advertise to me using the information that I, you know,
but they can't
overtly entered into Twitter.
Well, if you use the Twitter page, you could, but I don't. If you use a Twitter client, which is what spread Twitter in the first place, if they started pumping in ads too much into that on that basis, you'd be, you know, people would be having a fit.
Right. I like the idea that it's a cynical manipulation of the media. I don't know how sophisticated they are, if it is, but I like that idea. I think you're giving them a lot of credit. I think they might deserve it. You're right. They have no reason to track. So, we're going to come up with some Fakatka feature. Just so we could tell you, we don't track if you don't want us to. We will if you would like a better suggested user list.
I mean, it seems like Twitter is positioning themselves to cater to the sort of more tech-savvy audience, or the kind of, you know, between the patent stuff and the MySQL, you know, the Bootstrap and the MySQL modifications they released. They're pretty active in the kind of the open source world and the world of you know, advanced users, the kind of users that might check off do not track. Maybe Jeff is right. Maybe it's a PR move. Maybe it's a hostile PR move that's, you know, going to take down the advertising business model for the rest of the internet. And how could it's they? Like,
well, that's too late, because that horse has sailed. Because if horses could sail, that horse would have sailed. Because
it was sail in search of the gold of the fleece
of the golden
the holy fleece.
Holy fleece. That horse has sailed in search of the holy fleece. Because already it's going to be in the browsers, right? So the people who are at fault here, Jeff, really, the ones you should be angry are Firefox, Safari.
Yes, I am. I actually am.
Because those are the guys who created this whole notion.
It's the support of media. And, you know, if I want to be conspiratorial, the reason that the Wall Street Journal goes after this is because they are abandoning the ad market in favor of a paid market corporately. News Corp is.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that that's, you know, permeates every decision made there, but I think that's an impact. So those that are supported by advertising, which to me is going to be the key of media and journalism, the more it gets hurt, the more problems we have. Now, once again, I will always say in this case that the advertising and media industries did a terrible job of informing people what they were doing, why they were doing it, what benefits came out of it, why it was necessary. And so they've made this bed. I agree with that. But the emotional reaction to this of the tracking, and Gina, you're right, Twitter didn't make up the word tracking, but it still plays into that game.
And then uploading those so that you would get the
data. Right now, something's going on at the Google Plus Photographers Conference. We're going to keep an eye on it. Max Braun from Project Glass is about to take the stage to show pictures they've taken with the Google Glasses. So that's coming up a little later on. If you're on Google Plus, you could see it. Just go to the Project Glass.
So Google's hosting the photographer's event? I missed that.
It's a Scott Kelby event for Google Plus and photographers. It's the gplusc.com, the Google Plus.
So it's officially endorsed by Google.
That's an interesting question. Is Google certainly there?
Oh, that's cool. It's very
cool. It's a Scott Kelby, you know, Kelby Training's doing it. Yeah. Actually, Catherine Hall, our Twit photo host, is there doing a photo walk and so forth. But I'm curious. We'll watch the stream and see if they show any interesting pictures from G Plus. I'm sorry, from Project Glass. I almost misread this this article that says that Android smells like Axe.
That article is my fault. There, I think it was Read Write Web did an article on why the iPhone success has women to thank, and there's just a subheading which I couldn't resist. It was the Axe-like scent of Android's dudedom, and that's a reference to Axe body spray,
which only really, guys like. Women do not like
which,
it.
Which only yeah. guys like, right? But they'd have you believe that women like it.
Yeah, guys think women like it.
Right. Anyway, this isn't anything we haven't discussed before, just about how, you know, so many of the Android ads, especially the Droid ads
are
very
so much
geared toward men. They're very, very masculine.
And now T-Mobile, which had kind of this youthful little... First, they had Catherine Zeta-Jones, which I don't know why they changed. But then they got Carly, who's a young Catherine. And now she's, like, riding Harleys and stuff, like crazy.
Right, she went from the pink dress to the
Magenta motorcycle in skin-tight leather. She's basically the GoDaddy girl.
Well, not as bad. Not as bad as that. But.
The slogan is no more Mr. Nice Girl. So do you think, I mean, Gina, you're a woman. Do you think that Android appeals to men and iPhone? Is iPhone from Mars or from Venus and the Android from Mars?
If you're judging purely from ad campaigns, definitely. I mean, most of the Android ad campaigns are like robots and explosions and, you know, robot arms using the phone, whereas the iPhone ads are like regular people. I mean, granted, you know, is it rain? Like, those ads drive me crazy. But they're still, you know, lit, regular people, beautiful children smiling on the beach. You know, it's much more of a kind of a family-oriented, everyday life kind of take on things. You know, like, this one's going to make your life better. The Android message always seems to be for the people who want more power, you know, want to do more. You know, Droid does. You want to do more.
They focused on power.
Yeah, they focused absolutely on power. And I think that's, you know... A pretty clear.
I think the Zooey Deschanel ads for Siri are aimed at guys, though, right? Who are they aimed at?
I would say probably both.
Yeah, because it's Siri.
Samuel Jackson is making risotto with organic mushrooms. I mean, that's pretty.
Maybe that isn't aimed
at guys. And Zooey Deschanel, I think, has appeal to both. I mean, women want to be here. Men, you know.
Have you seen the parody?
No.
Here, this is Lindsay Doolin from Coachella. Kilchella.
This guy crying.
I do not understand.
Oh, she talks. Find nearest banjo store. Is this the close-up where I look around all quirky with my bangs?
No, that's next.
Hey, you. Who's directing?
We're good with the singing.
Siri, play my song.
If you've seen the Siri ads...
Hey, does this phone match my bangs? Are you ready? Siri, is my album gonna go platinum? Can I have a raspberry
She thinks it's a magic eight ball. She's shaking it.
One time I burped a cloud.
Okay.
I'm feeling like Indonesian food. And just need one more take.
Back one.
Is this the shot where you get my bangs?
It's so great.
Only if you've seen the originals, but yeah.
Okay. But I don't know. I think you can make the argument that dancing around your dirty house in your pajamas on a rainy Saturday and ordering tomato soup appeals to women.
I think you're right. I don't know who it appeals to, but yeah, I think you're right. She's just so cute.
She's adorkable.
Let's just play a couple of those just so that you, for fair.
Yes, It appears to be raining.
Oh. Let's get tomato soup delivered.
I found a number of restaurants whose reviews mention tomato soup and that deliver.
Good. Because I don't want to put on real shoes.
I don't know which is funnier, the real one or the parody. They're both equally dumb.
I mean, the fact that she's staring out the window at, like, pouring rain and
is
says,
it raining?
Is that rain? it's ridiculous. Is the sky crying?
Google.
So anyway, I had to drop that story into the front.
I love it.
The axe-like scent of Android.
I misread axe, but now that I know it was axe, I feel better.
The dude
I saw
dumb.
Somebody, I can't remember who this was, but just 2 days ago, somebody on Twitter thanked an airline for moving them because they sat next to someone. I think it was David Carr of the New York Times, I think, for sitting to someone who thought he was the poster boy for axe.
Oh, it's the worst. My son wears it.
It's actually, young.
I need to pull him aside and say, dude.
They've done an amazing job of convincing young men that, like, it's the right thing to do.
Well, in my day, remember High Karate, Jeff?
No,
It was a cologne that the guys had to fight women off with karate chops.
Yeah.
And then Brute for years owned that. So I think Axe is just following in a long tradition of, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm probably asking the wrong person, but I think most women just prefer guys do not wear cologne at all.
I mean, you probably are asking the wrong person. I appreciate my humans just smelling
clean. Yeah, like humans. Clean.
Yeah, human. Yeah. Like as if you've showered today in a way that, you care about being.
No, I can't stand perfumes either.
Dr. Mom says she likes cologne if it's subtle. Yeah, I don't like perfume much either. I don't. It's like it's too much.
I'm allergic, so I can't wear it.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
All right.
Google, did you... Leo, confession mode, did you ever wear Brill cream?
No, I'm not that old. Well, wait a minute. No, I did. When I was a little kid, when I was young, my dad would put dippity-doo in my hair.
Yeah.
He'd comb it because he's trying to, I don't know why, he had the conception, it might be true, that you have to train the hair to part. So he would put dippity-doo. I never did that for my son, and he has no parts, so maybe I'm not a good father.
Well, here's me showing off my ovaries. That's adorable.
I have a picture. I'll find it and I'll show you. My sister probably has it.
He's just imagining a mini Leo with your hair all.
I actually do have a picture of it. I'll find it while we're talking about our next commercial, which is Carbonite. Oh, I could do that in my sleep. I'm a big Carbonite supporter. Carbonite is an online backup. Done right, you got to back this stuff up because there's pictures of you wearing dippity doo and all sorts of stuff on your hard drive, and if you lose those, you'll be sad, you'll regret it, you'll never be happy again. And that's why Carbonite is such a great service. It's automatic, huge. It's automatic, it's continuous, so you don't have to kind of remember to back up. It's to the cloud. So, and that's important because what you don't want is you don't want your data to get lost, by sitting on a hard drive next to your computer and there's a fire, an earthquake or something. If it's in the cloud, it's always available. Mac or PC, you can get it back anytime. And the beauty of Carbonite is it's actually cloud storage too, which is spectacular. It means that your data is available on an iPad, an iPhone, an Android phone, Android tablet from their free apps anytime you want it back. I want you to check it out, carbonite.com. It's free to use for the first 2 weeks. In fact, that should be enough in most cases for your first full backup set. And from then on, it's very fast. It only backs up changes. There you go, carbonite.com. We're ready to back up. Check it out. 2 weeks free. And when you sign up using the offer code TWIG, you'll get 2 months free when you purchase. 14 months for the price of 12. Starts at $59 a year for everything on your internal drive. Carbonite.com. Backup done right. Let me see. I'm trying to log into my Smug Mug because I do believe I have a picture of me with Dippity Doo, but I cannot log in, unfortunately. Oh, well, I'll have to do it another time. It is time for, let me do a couple of quickies first, and then we'll do our tip, our number, and our tool of the week. Oh, wait a minute. No, I think I do have it. Let's see, it's in the vacations folder here somewhere. Memories of me as a young lad with dippity-doo in my hair.
Oh, we want to see lots of these.
That's my father.
Is that you? With,
that's my dad, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Aww. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think this is. I think that might be me with dippity-doo in my hair. I can't tell for sure.
Are you smoky, Leo? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, you know, I had a habit young.
Taking a few tokes there?
I don't know what the hell I'm doing there. There's quite a few. These are slides at my... oh, no, this is definitely it. These are slides that my sister had scanned. This is the dippity-doo. I was trying to impress a young lady.
Oh, awesome. You look very impressive there. I love, like, you're so cool. You're kind of like
holding
your
bottle of Coke.
Your bottle of Coke, yeah. And your sunglasses.
That's
totally cool.
I was singing. I would sing, "I've got some red roses for a blue lady," to her with my dippity-doo. I look like the Fonz, actually.
You do. That's a good shot. That is a good shot.
I'm probably 5 or 6 there. I think I'm pretty young.
The bottle of Coke is old school, too. I love that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting picture, isn't it? I'm glad I have that. That's an upper New York state. Yeah, my new profile picture. Anyway, sorry about that. I got a little distracted. Google giving Cornell 22,000 square feet of free office space for 5 years. I guess Cornell is going to build a new campus. It got the Roosevelt Island space, right?
Yes, this is a big deal. The Cornell won that, and we're going to trying to get the Stanford of New York. Yeah, so
Stanford wanted it. They wanted
Stanford
to be,
wanted it, then dropped out because the conditions were not what they wanted. Which is too bad.
I'm sure fairly expensive. California is about to pass a law that will allow self-driving cars in our state as well as Nevada. Now, I thought we had self-driving cars, but I guess Google was doing it illegally. So,
Right, the test cars,
the
right?
The test cars, yeah.
People have been spotted them on the freeways.
Eric Schmidt told the class of 2012 at BU, Boston University, to be an adorer of life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty smushy, good commencement address.
I agree. Every class enters a history that is, up to that point, being written for it. This is no different. What is different, though, is the chance that each generation has to make history and make it larger. Your generation's opportunities are greater. I like this, actually. I don't know if it's true. In fact, it probably isn't. Your generation's opportunities are greater than any generation's in modern history. It's always good to tell graduates, you know, the future's bright.
There's no jobs, but other than that.
Yeah, we actually, your future is actually worse than any generation I could think of, but I'm going to lie to you. I'm going to lie.
My favorite quote from this is, he said, people bemoan this generation that is growing up living life in front of screens, always connected to something or someone. These people are wrong. They're absolutely wrong. The fact that we're all connected now is a blessing, not a curse, and we can solve many, many problems in the world as a result. So
amen,
get back
brother.
On Facebook, graduates.
He says, you can write the code for all of us. You're connected to each other in ways those who came before you could never have dreamed of. You're using these connections to strengthen the invisible ties that hold humanity together and to deepen our understanding of the world around us. I would agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
But don't try to get a job because we ain't got no jobs.
And by the way, you're going to be mired in debt for the rest of your life.
Yeah. That college loan. Sorry about that. The guy who invented, he was the founder of Grand Central, which later became Google Voice, is now doing a conference calling business.
Boy, is this a welcome thing.
It's kind of scary because we do have a conference call advertiser.
But what it'll do, no, I know that, but what it'll do is it'll start to set new standards for how they operate.
I agree. I mean, it looks really cool. Right. I think it's
good. I think innovation in conference calls is good for everybody and bad for airlines.
Yeah. The Uber conference, it's called, and it's pretty cool looking.
Not to be confused with Uber, the car.
No, Uber's just the new hot word, I guess. Uber conference is free, so you could just like Grand Central was, and I presume it's freemium, just like Grand Central was. I would guess. Looks pretty cool. Look at that. Doesn't that look neat? And when somebody's making noise, like, it will automatically shut them up. Stuff like that.
Nice.
All right, real quickly before we get to tooltip, I forgot to mention this. I said I was going to. The Facebook IPO kind of crashing and burning. The folks at NASDAQ admit their software didn't work. Some say they knew, but they went ahead with it anyway. In fact, there's an interview on Business Insider, Henry Blodgett talking to an unnamed hedge fund investor who was pretty damn peeved. If I understand the interview correctly, the gist of it is the price should have popped. That it should have, you know, that the price really never popped. It went, started at $38, got up to $45, a mini pop, and then ended up at 38, you know, 38 or something like that. And is now down below that, I think, the last I checked.
Yeah, I think it's at like 32.
So the hedge fund guy is mad. He said because NASDAQ wasn't accepting the trades it should be accepting. If it had, it would have gotten us $50, $75. And my interpretation of that is he was ready to cash out.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He'd bought in big, and he was pissed that he couldn't make those billions of dollars from the Muppets, you and me, who were too stupid to not buy Facebook right at a hideously overvalued price. That's my interpretation of it. I think it's probably good that the NASDAQ software didn't work. Because, but in fact, Facebook never did pop.
But what's happening is it's appearing that it's developing that institutional investors had information that the Muppets didn't have, and that's bad.
That's huge.
That's a really bad thing.
So there were revised estimates on Facebook's expectations that were whispered to
lower expectations.
Lowered that these that they thought they were going to have an even worse quarter than they'd had the quarter before, which was already bad. And that when they found this out, they whispered it to institutional investors, but it was never told anybody. There is no SEC rule requiring that, apparently.
Really?
According to Blodgett, this is an absurd and unfair practice. The estimates themselves are material information. The consensus of smart, well-trained analysts who have, and this is what's important, worked with company management to develop realistic forecasts. Most investors don't even know these estimates exist, let alone that they're whispered verbally only to a handful of big investors. All potential investors should have easy access to these estimates as well as any logic underlying them. The SEC needs to change the rules here. So because these are not published, they are blessed by the company. So the company, Facebook, was telling big investors, in effect, we're not going to make as much money as we thought we might. And,
but there's irony there is that if the Muppets thought that Facebook was all hot, then the Muppets would have still bought the stock.
That's right. That's exactly right. So fortunately, NASDAQ systems failed, and there was no pop. Nobody got too badly screwed. Well, maybe they did. It's at $32 now.
IPO investors are suing.
Yes.
Looks like.
Yes.
Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs.
Yes. It's just a mess. Now, I think the case can be made, and Robert Scoble was making this case on Sunday on Twit, that Facebook priced it exactly right. Because the whole point for Facebook is they want to get as high a price as they can and actually sell the entire issue at that price because that's how much cash they're going to get. Usually, the investment bankers try to get a lower price out the door so that their premium customers can buy it at the lower price, then sell it on the open market to the Muppets, take advantage of them, make a big cash out in less than a day. And in fact, what happened was it went off at $38, ended at $38. Nobody made a big killing. And Facebook made the most cash it possibly could have made.
I agree with that. That's the point of the IPO. Somebody here in Seoul was arguing that they're going to hurt themselves. You know, a guy who knows his financial stuff. They're going to hurt themselves because
they were greedy.
Because the real value of the stock to the company is to motivate the employees. And if the employees don't see a big upside.
Yeah, so now the employees' strike price will be pretty similar to the actual price on the stock market. Maybe even they'll be underwater.
Yeah. Oh, for a while they will be, but that's all predictable. I mean, I think I own Google stock. I own Apple and Amazon. I think I'd buy Facebook at 30.
You're a Muppet.
Muppet.
That's right.
Even
Muppet.
Looks like a
that's
Muppet.
That's a common
jiggle
term.
My tummy. Like, jiggle my tummy.
Apparently, that's what the big shot investors call us retail investors who are too stupid.
I want to say muggles.
We're like the muggles. They're people that they plan to take advantage of, basically.
Right, like they're the wizards, right?
Yeah,
you know what
the
they're
muggles.
Doing. They have the backdoor info.
Right.
And then there's the muggles who are just sort of oblivious idiots.
Exactly.
It's insulting. That's totally insulting.
It's totally insulting. And it's exactly how they think of us. I just want you to know. And
no
so
pop
good.
For them.
No, pop no pop for them.
No pop for them.
The real issue was that the Facebook price was hugely overvalued because it was what I, you know, it depends on what you think the earnings were, but it was somewhere between, you know, 30 and 100 times earnings. And Google is, I don't know what the Google stock price is, something like 10 times earnings. So, you know, just really overvalued. And so it was just too high. It was too expensive. It was more expensive than it should have been. Google's at 20 times earnings, roughly. Apple, let's see what Apple is. Oops. AAPL, there you go. Apple's at 13.9 times earnings, price to earnings. Facebook's like 100. So that means that the stock is too much given how much money they make. And then, of course, there's the larger question of their market's starting to get, you know, they had bad last quarter. They're going to have a bad quarter this quarter because display ads aren't working. More people are using mobile now than are using the web. And Facebook hasn't yet come up with a coherent way to make money off that mobile. You're buying basically, I'm trying to talk Jeff out of it. You're making a bet on Mark Zuckerberg, I think.
Yeah.
And that he will exactly somehow magically, and I don't think he's that magic, figure out a way to make money on 900 million people.
I just believe in platforms, and I think that Facebook remains a platform. Now, the problem with Facebook versus Google is that, you know, it's not an open platform, and somebody could come along, but the switching cost is high. I think that Amazon and Google and Facebook are platforms, and that's where the value falls these days.
And this is why I'm so glad that I don't buy tech stocks.
But yeah, me too. I mean, but that caveat, but it's not an open platform. That's just the killer for me.
It's a huge one. Well, you know, they're interesting.
That's politics, not money. Closed is good for money.
Tom Friedman had a column, I think this week, I don't know where I am or what week I'm in, in which Jeff Bezos said that gatekeepers are dying. Now, the interesting thing about that is Jeff Bezos the new gatekeeper? Well, not if he's a platform, right? The gatekeeper makes and controls a scarcity. A platform opens up for whatever the hell happens. So in that sense, is Facebook a platform akin to Amazon? Well, Amazon's closed in some ways. Facebook's closed in ways. Google's closed less, but still closed in ways. We have the open public internet owned and run by private companies, and that's Facebook's just part of that.
Well, I guess as the reporter on the local news always says in his closeout, only time will tell.
It is true.
Will Google and Facebook ever succeed? Only time will tell. I think Google, when it went off, its IPO was at $85, price to earnings of roughly 67. So it was high. It was high.
How long ago was that IPO?
2004, 8 years ago.
Four?
Yeah.
Do you think that in 8 years from now, we'll be sitting here talking about Facebook's stock price?
Ah, that's interesting.
The best analysis, the simple analysis I see is that a billion customers at 100 billion valuation, it's $100 lifetime value per customer. Yeah.
Amazon's. Okay. Amazon's price to earning is 82. It's pretty high. So maybe Facebook isn't so overpriced. I don't know. This is why, you know, I go back and forth. This is why I just don't. I buy market indexes and no load mutual funds because I'm an idiot. The readability uproar. Gina, it looks like you wanted to talk about that. I don't want to leave that.
Yeah,
out.
We could probably save it for another show. It's been going on for a while, but that. We could save it for another show. Right. Readability launch read lists where you can grab a bunch of articles together and send them to your iPhone or your iPad in kind of a clean format without the advertising. And actually, I feel like Jeff has to have a lot to say about this. But maybe next show.
Next show. We'll do it. Okay. We're running out of time. Let's get Gina Trapani's tip of the week. How about that?
Last week, we talked about Google rolling out their new knowledge graph search results, their, you know, things, not strings update, which basically takes the right side of your search results page and shows kind of a formatted block of information about something when Google knows what you're talking about. I just got it. It rolled out to my search results a few days ago, and there are some pretty cool things you can see here. These results are kind of like one box, but on steroids. So one box is like, hey, you know, what time is it in Austin, Texas? And it would tell you kind of right at the top of the search results. But the you know, things not strings is this huge box on the right side. So you can do a few kind of cool things with it. Lifehacker did a list of five kind of interesting things you can do. First, if you search for a person, like if you search for Leo Laporte, you get an excerpt from Leo's Wikipedia page where you
graduated. That's what Adam Curry was kind of mocking that. Like, these are the facts that Google finds is it's Wikipedia. This is it? This is the knowledge graph? Your Wikipedia entry?
Well, you know, that's part of it. Some of it's from Google+, some of it's from Wikipedia. I mean, Wikipedia provides a lot of structured data in a way that's very predictable, right? Not a lot of services do
it, yet. It presumably will get better, but right now it is Wikipedia and Google+.
It's basically Wikipedia and Google+. And some people, like, I think if you search for a big-name author like Stephen King, you'll get links to books and other things. Like, I was wondering, you know, when are my books and apps going to show up in my knowledge graph results. But you can also search for, you can search for cities and places. So if you search for something like Austin, Texas, you'll get, you know, the Wikipedia excerpt, a Google map. You'll get, you know, what time it is in Austin at the moment. You know, the weather. You get a lot of facts about that one place. You can do the same thing if you're looking for a post office or an Italian restaurant. You'll get the nearest, you know, ones nearest to you. So it's kind of like the best of, you know, Google's sort of semantic search all in one place. And because they're doing it on the right side there, they have a lot more real estate to show that information.
And it does have a little link that says report a problem at the bottom. So presumably the crowdsourcing will improve.
Yeah, hopefully it will improve. I think they can do better. I think they can add more facts. But it's pretty good to begin. You can search also, last tip, you can search for like a venue. So if I search for Petco Park, which is the Padres, where the Padres play here in San Diego, you know, you get the map and the facts about Petco, but you also get a list of events, so what's going on at Petco. And the other interesting bit is you get this people also search for, which of course for an ego search, this is really interesting. Like, you know, it's interesting to see if people search for your name, you know, what are the other people, who else are they searching for? And actually, Leo, Jeff and Leo, you two are the first two suggestions in my people also search for list, and Sarah Lane and Anil and Tom Merritt. So
that's funny. That's almost the same as mine. I get Sarah Lane, Tom Merritt, Kevin Rose, Steve Gibson.
I mean, obviously, you know, Google knows a lot, that, you know, knows that the Twit Gang is connected and related. Now, I mean, that sounds like that's just from search patterns. But I imagine they're using some circles.
It's gotta be. I bet you it's circles stuff.
Yeah. It's gotta be circles.
I think it must be. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Gina. That's a great tip. Your number of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
I couldn't, for some reason, I couldn't put it in the rundown, but here it is. Google Vice President David Lawy said that 2/3 of Google acquisitions have been successful. In 100 companies it's bought since 2001.
Interesting.
I found that vaguely interesting. And I think, you know, if that's if you buy that, it's not a bad percentage at all, given what companies like Yahoo and AOL have done. Companies. So he cited DoubleClick and AdMob as successful operations and admitted that Slide was in the 1/3.
That's kind of sad, actually.
Yes, but though he said that 85% of that team ended up working for YouTube and they've done well there.
Oh, good. Oh, good. My tool, I ordered one, and I'm excited about the Galaxy S3. Scoble saw one, and he said it's fast, it's gorgeous, and you can get it now for a mere $700 on Amazon Wireless. Holy cow. It will be an AT&T phone, but it will work, I guess, with T-Mobile, just not on the HSPA Plus network, just on the Edge network.
So, Amazon Wireless?
AmazonWireless.com. Yeah, they have a wireless store. That's where I've been lately buying my phones. So
that's a new one on me.
Yeah, yeah. And usually it has either unlocked or it will have a from the carriers as well. It's going to be end of the month that this phone will come out on AT&T. But this, I went to Expansys and bought the international unlocked version because, you know me, I like to spend lots of money on phones I only use for a month. But I'll tell you what, but the minute it arrives, I will show you. It's not unusual. Usually they're $600 or $700 because they're unlocked and you're not subsidized and all that stuff. And I don't know what I'm going to do with my note. I love my note. I might be sad. I might be really sad. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this show Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. Do watch live if you can. We like that. That time, by the way, is 2000 UTC. But if you can't, we make audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv. So please download it. Subscribe would be the best on iTunes or whatever you use to get your podcasts, because we will make sure that you get it each and every week. Jeff Jarvis is the author of The Great Public Parts, which is a must-read for anybody who is curious about the new privacy. That's available from Simon & Schuster. He's also a journalism professor, and he's about to board a plane. When is your flight? Soon, right?
10, so as soon as we're off, I'm going to go dashing to the airport shuttle.
All right, 12 hours in a plane. Good luck, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Really
appreciate
it.
I hope your knee feels better, Jeff.
Yeah, old dad got there.
Jeff took a tumble in Seoul. Gina Trapani is at smarterword.org. That's where she blogs. She's also working hard on ThinkUp at thinkupapp.com.
Great show as usual.
Always
Thanks
fun.
For me.
Thank you so
Always
much.
Fun.
TNT, our your daily dose of tech news, is coming up next with Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane, and Iyaz Akhtar. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.